welcome to the Philadelphia Channel, spotlighting the innovators making meaningful impact throughout the region across a wide range of collaborative and creative fields, including philanthropy, education, technology, family life, social entrepreneurship, advocacy of the arts, and more. Here's your host, Robert Rim.
Housed in a 19th century stone mansion on 6 acres in Chestnut Hill, Woodmere Art Museum is dedicated to the art and artists of Philadelphia, offering lectures, panel discussions, gallery talks, tours, jazz and classical music series, films, and educational outreach. The building and grounds, together with the core of the collection, are the gifts of Charles Knox Smith, who purchased the estate with a grand ambition to provide spiritual encounters with art in the context of nature's beauty. It opened its doors to the public in 1910. The Woodmere is accredited by the American Alliance of Museums, a distinction held only by some 5% of museums nationwide, and is on the National Register of Historic Places. Dr. William Valerio serves as the Patricia Van Berg Allison Director and CEO of the Woodmere. As a result of Bill's leadership and expanding on Smith's vision, it's become an increasingly vital presence in the cultural life of the region, with steady growth in attendance, membership, and community involvement. By organizing almost 100 exhibitions and enlarging and digitizing the museum's collection, Bill has significantly elevated the visibility of Philadelphia's artists. Bill graduated from Williams College in 1985, earned his MA in Art History at the University of Pennsylvania in 1987, and his PhD in Art History at Yale in 1996. After working for 6 years in New York museums, he attended Penn's Wharton School, earning his MBA in 2004 with a focus on strategic management and marketing. He's received numerous awards and fellowships, including the Rome Prize of the American Academy in Rome. Bill, welcome to the Philadelphia Channel.
Thank you for having me.
As mentioned, the museum was created by Charles Knox Smith. Tell us something more about him and what drove his passion for art.
Well, Charles Knox Smith is a classic American success story. He was not an educated man. He grew up a poor kid in the Kensington neighborhood of the city and had his first job as a messenger boy for a company that was something of a consortium that owned coal mines in western Pennsylvania, with a small bequest from one of the partners at the company. He started his own mining company that had considerable success in Mexico, actually, mining different metals, but especially silver. And it was with that fortune that he launched into his great passion, which was art. He was a city leader, founding member of the Union League here in Philadelphia, devoted to the ideas of Abraham Lincoln. And at the core of his passion for the arts was American landscape painting. And so the great Hudson River painters, who gave a spiritual sense of, you know, the beauty of the American lands, I think is what brought him into the arts at first. And being a Philadelphia guy through and through and really loving this city, he did a lot to collect the works of the living artists of his time. And so Woodmere's collection has a terrific sampling of the leading artists of the city in the later decades of the 19th century. And that has a lot to do with who Charles Knox Smith was as a man. He was involved in causes and organizations across the city. He was a member of the Common Council, which was the precursor of today's City Council of the city. And his creation of Woodmere was, in his mind, a gift to the fellow citizens of his city. He began the building of Woodmere and the creation of Woodmere in the late 1890s here in Chestnut Hill. And his idea was an experience that he could offer of art surrounded by the beauty of nature, because Chestnut still is located right along the Wissahickon, and it's some of the most beautiful landscape and park experiences that we have in the city, the region, the country. And Charles Knox Smith's idea was that you could approach Woodmere for the experience with the art surrounded by the beauty of nature, and that it would elevate your soul.
Yeah, and appreciating the mansion is such an intrinsic part of the Wardmuir Museum. What are the home and its 6-acre grounds like?
Charles Knox Smith expanded the museum. And so while we have some galleries that are historic galleries that have Victorian and turn-of-the-century neoclassical elements, we've also got galleries that date to 1910 that are more modern in spirit. He collaborated with the young George Howe, who's one of our great 20th century architects, who also lived here in Chestnut Hill, and built what is our largest and most dramatic gallery, our Cook and Del Bueno Gallery, which is a two-level rotunda-shaped space that has great spaces for dramatic art, as well as intimate spaces for smaller works that you can really engage with in an intimate way. And so the museum offers a variety of different types of galleries, all of which offer terrific experiences with art. Our rotunda-shaped gallery was also designed for acoustics. Charles Knox Smith hosted concerts and did a lot of the things that we still do in the museum today in terms of engaging people with art and music together. For example, he served wine. We happen to have some of his receipts for wine and refreshments he would provide when people were coming to the museum. So he was a social guy, and we try to maintain the social spirit of Wardmuir today.
And the Wardmuir's collection itself consists of more than 8,000 works of art, and 9 galleries offer exhibitions and programs that serve both adults and children. What is it about the museum's permanent collection that makes the Wardmuir so special?
Well, what's special is that we tell the story of the arts in Philadelphia, going back to the first European-American artists in this country. Philadelphia was the capital of the United States, as we know, and the collection begins with Charles Wilson Peale, Benjamin West, other artists in the Peale family, and comes right up to today. We tell the story of the academic and realist arts and the narrative and illustration arts, which are also representational and storytelling. I would say that is the mainstream of the arts in Philadelphia. But we also tell the story of the avant-garde as it evolved in Philadelphia. And one of the things that we enjoy exploring and presenting in our exhibitions is that, you know, Philadelphia has a very distinct history in the arts that has to do with who we are as a city, both as a city that's founded with these strong Quaker principles of respect and this idea of sharing beauty. Philadelphia was an English city, unlike New York, which was a Dutch city. So the English city is all about gardens and nature, and that's an important aspect of the arts as it evolved in Philadelphia. And then the avant-garde and modernism in Philadelphia takes its own shape according to the equilibrium of the particular modernist artists that lived in our city. People like Arthur Carles, for example, our great modernist of Philadelphia, who contributed to American art in bringing American art in general, in bringing European avant-garde ideas to the United States in the early decades of the 20th century. Here in Philadelphia, Carles' sense of color, his sense of, you know, what is it in the stuff that's happening in Paris with Picasso and Matisse, and, you know, what is it about that that appealed to him, has a really strong imprint in the avant-garde of Philadelphia, I believe. And so at Wardmuir, we're interested in telling the stories of what is it that makes Philadelphia's art different, both in terms of the way it looks and why does it look that way, and what are the cultural and social ideas that shape the cultural life of this city. I mean, that's what Wardmuir's collection is about, and that's how we try to explore it in our exhibitions and programs and to engage people with that through everything that we do.
And about the modern, earlier this year you welcomed a new edition. Tell us about Whitewater. It's the stainless steel abstract sculpture by Robinson Friedenthal.
Well, that's a sculpture that I've admired since I first stepped foot in Philadelphia. I moved here in 2002. It's a masterpiece by the artist Robinson Friedenthal, who's one of the great public sculptors of his time, 1970s, 80s. It is a 20-foot colossal sculpture that you know, is really about the intrinsic magic of geometry. It's a sculpture based on triangular forms that repeat and double on themselves, shapes that create three-dimensional, you know, it's all triangles, so the triangles become pyramids. And it's like symmetrical, metallic origami in the landscape that has a triumphant feel. It's like a big triumphal arch. But I think it also engages people because the mathematics of it are so apparent that the human mind latches on to the patterns that are discernible. And I feel that once you give yourself over to it, it draws you in a deep way. It's a real game changer for us at Woodmere. It's a spectacular large sculpture that we put right at the corner of Bells Mill Road and Germantown Avenue. So it becomes something of a Woodmere landmark, a Northwest Philadelphia landmark, and a regional landmark that we really love, that it greets people going up and down Germantown Avenue as they're entering or leaving the city from the north.
It's incredibly engaging, and you bring so much to the public that way. And I'm thinking about your educational initiatives, which are really terrific, and the Helen Miller Children's Gallery showcases exhibitions of art made by students. So reaching and teaching the children of Philadelphia is an important part of the Woodmere's mission, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. We have 10,000 children who come to Woodmere in the course of the year with their classrooms. And I have an army of docents and educators who are busy every day during the school year. And then we have a summer camp in the summer, and we have weekend programs for families. So there are kids in the museum all the time, which is great and exciting. We learn lots from the kids. And we have a range of programs targeting different parts of the school curriculum, the school district curriculum. And we work with kids from pre-K to college. We work with groups of kids who are unfortunately living in homeless shelters. And we have lots of creativity in our education program.
And tell us about Kids Care 26, Faces and Places in Our Town.
So Kids Care is a program I'm very proud of. It happens every December at Woodmere. Although it starts in January, we work with different art classrooms and art teachers across the city who collaborate with us on creating works of art. Children create the works of art that are destined to be given as gifts to people who are homebound over the holidays. We partner with MANA, and every item that is made, and there are generally 1,000 works of art, sometimes more, that are made in the course of the year that get shown at the museum in December. And then wrapped up, we have a big wrap-up day where a lot of the families and parents come back. Our volunteers get involved. We set up tables with wrapping paper and cards all through the galleries. And we wrap up every single object. There's a card attached to each object, and MANA delivers it to a specific person. And the idea is manifold. It's designed to cheer up folks who are homebound over the holidays, but it has the amazing impact of showing and demonstrating and getting young people involved in kindness, in social engagement, in the generosity of doing something beautiful for somebody that you don't know. And children, parents often describe just what a meaningful project it is to be involved with Kids Care.
That's wonderful to hear. And the kids are really into this program, aren't they?
Oh, my God. Well, it's wonderful to be involved in making an art project. It's doubly wonderful to see it on the wall in the museum in an exhibition. And then, you know, the whole, you know, the engagement with the process of what happens to that work of art that you don't get to take it home the way you usually do when you make an artwork at the museum or an artwork in your classroom. The ground rule is that it's not going to be yours. It's going, you're making it for somebody else. And that is a terrific thing for kids to kind of wrap their minds around. And it puts them in a headspace that is very positive and very productive. And I think ingrains a sense of civic involvement. I mean, I hope that the children that go through the program will continue to be involved in causes across the city that have to do with healthcare, but, you know, maybe the environment, maybe the arts, you know, civics in general. I think that kids care really has an important impact.
And along the same lines, the Woodmere has been granted an assist from the Commonwealth to construct an outdoor educational center on the property. Describe the expansion and what it'll mean for the Woodmere and its patrons.
Sure. So Woodmere is a great stone historic mansion on 6 acres. And the big strategic move that we're making is moving outside of the museum's walls into the great green outdoors, the 6 acres of green space that we have, 6 acres of green space that, you know, make Woodmere somewhat unique. There's no other museum in the city that has this kind of opportunity to bring art outdoors. And so we're focused on sculptures like Robinson Friedenthal's White Water, where we've developed a math curriculum. If you give one measurement of one piece of the sculpture, you can generate the mathematics of the, you know, what is the total surface area and what is the volume of the sculpture. And we've worked with some math teachers at the local schools here to develop that math curriculum for younger kids, for middle school kids, and for high school kids. And thinking about works of art as launching points for important discussions, but educational skill building is what we plan to do in our outdoor space. We're also looking at engaging with art and environmental stewardship together. So a first step of our big move outdoors and some of the terrific support that we've got both from the Commonwealth and from some of our private funders, both foundations and individuals, has had to do with a big stormwater management project here at Woodmere. We have a fully permeable parking lot so that we send water back down into the ground. We purify that water in a bioswale. We slow down that water so that it doesn't go back into the city's storm sewer system through a series of step pools. And that stormwater management project, although it's something that was designed by engineers and not by artists, nonetheless has an extraordinary beauty to it and an interesting science to it that has everything to do with just responsibility to nature. Woodmere is a 25,000 square foot building with a lot of roof. We get more than 50,000 visitors a year, and so we need a substantial parking service and driveways and all of that. And the responsible thing to do, especially when you exist in the middle of the Wissahickon watershed, as we do, is control your stormwater runoff, as well as purify the water that washes over and through and under cars in your parking lot. So we do all of those things, and we've seen how effective it is to open children's minds and adults' minds about, you know, why is it important to do all these things? And we haven't talked at all yet about, you know, another spectacular sculpture that we have here, a sculpture that's on long-term 99-year loan from the city of Philadelphia, Harry Bertoia's Free Interpretation of Plant Forms, a masterpiece from the mid-1960s by the artist Harry Bertoia. And it's a magical kind of wave-like, flowing, mushroomy fountain that shoots water up in the air, and then water seems to flow magically into the ground. And, you know, of course it recirculates, but, you know, with the Bertoia, we're able to talk to people about where does the water go in the sculpture. And then it's from that discussion about the sculpture and the magic and the beauty of the sculpture that we're then able to say, well, this is an important conversation. Where does the water go? When you turn on the tap and turn it off, water goes down the drain. Where does it go? Where does the water come from? Do you know what your reservoir is? When you, again, put a glass under the tap at home and drink it, do you know where that water is coming from? And so the Bertoia sculpture has allowed us to initiate those conversations in the landscape. And our goal with the current capital project, where we're going to bring more sculpture into the landscape and design the landscape such that we can speak to people about the sculpture, is going to be all about developing that curriculum for students and those kinds of experiences for the directors of the museum. And we're going to make a formal sort of a classroom space so that we've got a place to stop and sit and do some of the things that we'd like to do, even make art outside and stuff like that.
And now, a word from Arch Street Press. Better to Speak of It, Fostering Relationships and Results Through Creativity is a book of core management and personal values written in collaboration with Clive Gillinson, Executive and Artistic Director of Carnegie Hall, offering firsthand experiences from Gillinson and the leaders of key nonprofit, corporate, educational, and cultural institutions, including the New York City Department of Education, Museum of Modern Art, New York Public Library, and Juilliard, and major performing artists such as Joyce D. Donato, Anne Sophie Mutter, Jesse Norman, and Michael Tilson Thomas. The book appeals to readers, including nonprofit directors and managers, corporate executives and employees, arts administration staff and students, and the public interested in the health and well-being of the arts. Exploring the vital benefits of innovation and organizational management, serving others in effective partnerships, access and mentoring, budgeting and well-considered risk, media and effective communications, education, and lifelong learning. We now return to Bill and Robert.
To use art as a launching point, as you say, for discussions about these key parts of life, we really do have such a close relationship to the natural world, don't we?
I think it's one of the beautiful things about living in Philadelphia. I mean, I said before that one of the things that, for me at least, defines the experience of being, you know, a resident of this city, of being a citizen of Philadelphia, is that it's a green city in so many ways. That Fairmount Park, the largest park system in the country, the Wissahickon, is spectacularly beautiful. And I think that there's a culture in Philadelphia of gardens and nature that I don't believe exists elsewhere. I grew up in New York, and if New York is a city of commerce and striving and competition, that's not Philadelphia, or at least not the Philadelphia I know.
or so many of us know, yes.
I mean, certainly there's competition and all of that here in Philadelphia, but the green experience of Philadelphia, to me, is one of the defining features of this city, and I think that Woodmere really can engage with bringing that to the surface and connecting people to what that aspect of Philadelphia is all about, and that we can use art to get to that place, that the experiences with art can help you get there. So we're looking at different ways, and this might sound a little goofy in the abstract, but we're looking at ways that horticulture and interest in horticulture can inform the specific sculptures. So I've described, for example, the Robinson Friedenthal Whitewater as it's an artwork based on triangular forms. There are certain plants in nature that also have growth patterns that are triangular. There are certain grasses, for example, where the blade of grass is actually triangular shaped. And that triangular shape determines the properties of the appearance, the movement, the qualities of that particular grass. And so we're looking to plant that kind of grass, that this triangular grass around the, it's not a triangular grass, but it's a, you know, it's a type of grass with triangular structures built into its organic forms. And so we're looking to create a dialogue between the sculpture, which is made of triangles, and this grass that has triangular structures embedded in it as well. With the Bertoia, we realized that as a fountain, it functions as the city's largest bird bath in a lot of ways. And when we arrive in the morning, there are birds bathing in it and stuff like that. And so we decided to plant around it a hedge. There's a hedge that separates it from our parking surface. And we decided to plant that hedge with local plants local to the Wissahickon prior to 1492, that are plants that sustain and feed the local birds and insect life. And so we've chosen plants not necessarily for their decorative purposes, although I think that they're very beautiful, but because they make all different kinds of berries that are important to the birds that have evolved here over time with those very plants. And we hope that in that way, we've created something of an encyclopedia of choices of local shrubs and berry bushes and trees, all kinds of service berries and choke berries and choke cherries and lots of things that I hadn't heard of before, but are nonetheless very beautiful and that create a wonderful home for insects and birds here. And I think we all know that we've all become educated to understand that we're all part of the same ecosystem and we need the insects and the birds. And so again, the sculpture led to this specific kind of thinking about horticulture, and we hope that these become experiences that heighten awareness and engagement with the natural world as it is today and as it needs to be cared for.
And how we relate to nature certainly connects people. You mentioned connecting people, and that reminds me about the current exhibition of the Woodmere presenting really the first large-scale exhibition of Edith Neff's work in more than two decades. She's a cherished Philadelphia artist who died at age 52 in 1995. And she certainly embodies the mission of the Woodmere, doesn't she?
Oh, absolutely. Edith Neff is an artist who moved the needle in the arts in Philadelphia. She's a realist painter who absolutely fits in the history of realism in the arts, which I spoke about a little bit earlier as something of the mainstream in the arts in Philadelphia, from Charles Wilson Peale to Thomas Aikens, you know, right up through the 20th century. She starts working in the 1960s. Her realism has a modernist edge to it, especially with regard to color. But as a realist artist, she's painting what she sees in front of her. She worked with photographs the way Thomas Aikens was and was conscious of doing that as he did. She loved this city of Philadelphia, and it's an observational kind of realism that is all about the specific people in the city of Philadelphia, sometimes people she knew, sometimes her subjects are strangers who she photographed because she encountered them on the street and was able to snap a shot of them. But her subject is the people and places of Philadelphia. Philadelphia is her most encompassing subject. And she was an important inspiration for artists who came after, who are the leading realist artists in America today. Artists, you know, for example, like Beau Bartlett, who's got a national career. And Beau would describe what an important inspiration Edith Neff was to him. So she's an important artist in our city. The paintings are beautiful. They're fun. They're provocative. She was an artist who depicted race in a way that I think is unique for her time. She depicts African Americans and non-African Americans, white Americans and black Americans together in her pictures. The public space is a shared space in Edith's work. She also approaches the city with a strong feminist point of view. She's much more interested in the nude male body than the female nude body. And she was very strong in her understanding that as a straight woman, that was her interest and perspective, and she enjoyed painting male nude bodies, and that comes across in her art as well. So it's a really wonderful show. We have a great number of Edith's work in the museum collection, and so it was an important show for us to do just in terms of exploring what is deep under our own roof in our own collection. But it's an exhibition that brings this important artist to visibility, having not been visible for, you know, a little bit too long since she passed away in 1995.
Politically and socially, she was really ahead of her time, wasn't she?
Oh, she absolutely was. And what's so interesting about her is that she does not set out to be a political artist, but she has so much discipline in her realist approach to paint what she sees, to paint the people that she sees, that her honesty in that makes it political because it is a view into the 1970s or the 1960s and how people interacted in the public spaces. So, for example, a painting in Woodmere's collection that's a visitor favorite is the Hunting Park Pool, the Hunting Park Swimming Pool by Edith Neff. And it shows black kids and white kids playing in the pool. And although they're together, they're somewhat separate, and there's a lot of activity and action in the pool. What I believe she does is put her finger on a sense of change and something of a pulse on the city. And I think that we had a community conversation working with the Mount Airy Learning Tree just last night. We started at 6:30 and we ended at 8:30 talking about pretty much this one painting with about 75 people from across the community here, mostly in the Northwest. And, you know, we talked about how, you know, how this painting functions. And some people could see very clearly that the artist is making a message about race. Kids who are together but separate, the black kids and the white kids, are in the same pool, but they have different postures and different body language in relation to the social space that they're in. They might be together and adjacent to each other, but they seem kind of separate. And people could see that in different ways. She's an artist who makes images that are very complex and invite the viewer still today to, you know, have to puzzle it out. And I think that's one of the really exciting things about her work. She doesn't give you the answers. She's looking at things. She's recording what she sees. She's putting it together. She's making it dynamic. She's making it colorful. She's making it juicy. She's a very painterly painter. Like, if you love paint, you will love her work. So it engages you visually, but then the subject matter is something that you kind of have to wrestle with. And she's ahead of her time, I think, in addressing some of these issues about gender, about race, that are top of mind in today's culture in so many ways. And I think that what we try to do in the museum, and I would say this is at Woodmere, but my colleagues, you know, at other museums in Philadelphia and across the country are also thinking this way. When we present the art of the past, whether it's the art of 1995 or the art of 1895 or the art of 1795, how is it that that art is relevant to what it is that people are thinking about today? And that's how we strategically design our exhibitions. Can these exhibitions, can this art be presented in such a way that the people who engage with it today are going to have an experience that means something? And, you know, that's not to say that the experience isn't something that can be quite simple. It is very important to have beauty in life. And sometimes an experience in a museum can be important just for the sheer beauty of the art or the sheer beauty of the nature that it's embedded in. And we do that as well.
Messages about society, complex and inviting, ever relevant to today's life, such vital and enriching aspects. Well, listeners can find out more about the Woodmere by visiting woodmereartmuseum.org and on social media. Bill, good to talk with you, and all the best to the entire Woodmere team in support of artists, education, and the community.
Thank you so much for spending the time with me.
Access, stream, and download the Philadelphia Channel bi-weekly, part of the International Innovate podcast series on PRX, the Public Radio Exchange, iTunes, and online at innovatepodcast.org. On behalf of the Philadelphia Channel team and our collaborators, good to have you join us.